or if we have some more, because I'm going to read from the paper pretty much. In very short, in the last few days, we have been discussing from the Chaitanya Chandra Doi Natak. It is a play in the form of a Sanskrit drama. It's quite a lengthy play. Meanwhile, I've been reading a little more about these Sanskrit plays. And it was not uncommon that such Sanskrit plays would last the whole day. They would be like 5 to 10 acts. This is 10 acts. And at least it had to be finished in one day, a natak. So it could be from morning till night. And if you add it up in time to perform this play, it would probably take the whole day. So you can imagine. Of course, in Bengal still, there are such kind of dramas that go the whole night, and people just, in the end, the audience just stays in the pandal. They just stay in the tent and they just go to sleep. Wake up, and the next day the performance also goes on. These things we see happen in Bengal, where natak is still a very big thing. But this play certainly would take many, many hours to perform. It's not just, it would be a whole day experience. Right? And therefore, it's also not easy to finish it all in a 5-day seminar of 5 hours, because the play lasts longer than that. In that sense, it's a play. But some critics say, right? Some critics say it's not a play at all, because there's no, it doesn't have the usual imagination of a play, etc. And it doesn't, because it is actually purely biographical. Right? So what they consider a discredit, we consider a credit. Right? It's very wonderful. It's not just a play. It's like a testimony of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and appearance. So in this way, it's very nice. One critic is also making the point that, and then he puts in so many arguments against, he makes Sarvabhauma give long philosophical explanations against Mayavad, and again we say, hey, really good. So that which, it is again the usual theme, Yanisa Sarvabhutanam, it is what is night for them is day for us. These are for us the real essence of the play. We're not looking at a poetic rendering in a particular style, but we are looking at the essence of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So, in the last few days, we arrived at the point where Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. He has just taken sannyas. He has disappeared. And Nityananda has promised to bring him back, but it has not happened yet, and we will now. So all the devotees are waiting, and they are practically dying. In the Chaitanya Mangal, it says that when Nityananda finally came to Navadvip, he found everyone practically half dead, and everyone looked totally emaciated, gone. And so this is the situation where we are now. The residents of Navadvip are half dead. And with that, we begin. Lord Nityananda is with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after he's taken sannyas. Act 5, Pastimes at Advaitacharya's Home. Nityananda, the fire of renunciation makes him melt with the nectar of love for Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is wandering about in an ecstatic state of love of God. Nityananda is waiting for the opportunity to lead the Lord to Advaitacharya's home. They meet a group of cowherd boys who call out the name of the Lord upon seeing Lord Chaitanya. Nityananda, now the Lord's madness of bliss makes him like an old man. He opens his eyes but cannot see what is before him. Half deaf, he can hear a little but cannot understand the meaning of the words. And they say he's not a good poet. I would say that's pretty good poetry. So then he asks one of the boys the way to Vrindavan, and Lord Nityananda makes politics and tells the boy to point to the path along the Ganges, and they send him along the Ganges. And there, Lord Chaitanya comes to the Ganges. Lord Chaitanya mistakes the Ganga for the Yamuna, and Advaita Acharya appears. Gradually, the Lord realizes that he has been cheated by Lord Nityananda. They go to Advaita Acharya's house. Advaita Acharya, what kind of pastimes are you doing? You have accepted the sannyas ashram, which is so dear to the Advaitavadis, the impersonalists. Bhagavan laughing, Advaita, do you think I'm not an Advaitavadi? After all, you and I are different from the Supreme only in the sense that we are different persons with different forms and qualities. So in this way he's propounding Mayavad philosophy, but in this case it's true because both of them are expansions of the Lord. Then all the residents of Navadvip appear. Mother Sachi is shocked to see her son as a sannyasi and embraces him. Advaita, that way I was before, the way you be before, the way your devotees were, the love they felt for you, and your mercy towards them, all these are the only source of our happiness. Any changes in these will bring us pain. So Advaita Acharya, see what happened was when Lord Chaitanya finally came back, all the devotees came, and they just forgot. Some even forgot that he took sannyas. Right? Although others were still remembering, but some, they got caught up in the dancing and the chanting, and everything was just perfect. So Advaita Acharya is here expressing that mood. The way it was before, everything was fine, and any change in that will just be unacceptable to us. But Lord Chaitanya says, Advaita, Advaita, don't talk like this. My body has fallen into a dark nectar river and now is violently tossed by that river's waves. So the dark nectar river of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, after taking sannyas, has become so absorbed in his remembrance of Krishna. Too late now, he can never be the same he was before. At this point, he is somewhere else. That is his point. So that is the fifth act. And I had some highlights also, which are, if you have the paper, they are on page 12. So some different statements were made that cheated by Lord Nityananda, who took him to Advaita Acharya's house instead of Vrindavan, the Lord says, I became an actor in a drama directed by Sripad Nityananda. So that whole point about the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifesting himself in different features and how one feature is cheating the other is very interesting. How these two manifestations of the Lord are working contradictorily. Lord Chaitanya is totally strict about being a sannyasi. He's not going back to his family. No way. He's finished with that. But somehow or other, Nityananda brings him back, right, by some trick. Because whereas Lord Chaitanya is setting the standard for following the principles of sannyas in the most strict way, and in that way sets the standard for the entire Sankirtan movement to come, right, where there's absolutely no room for anyone to play with the principles. Lord Chaitanya just sets such an example, and we see it reconfirmed in his dealings with Chota Haridas later on, who was a sannyasi who intimately mixed with some ladies, right, for in some discussion, and was rejected by Lord Chaitanya. So the whole thing is Lord Chaitanya projects a standard to the future generations of Vaishnavas. And now we can appreciate how much required that is in modern times. Right? We see how difficult it is to maintain a standard of sannyas in modern times. And many people have no idea. just recently, devotees that had been around for many, many years, maybe 15 years or more, they say, "You mean you cannot speak to your former wife?" I said, "No, of course not, you know. What can I do?" He said, "No, I never knew that, you know." It's like, well, it's one of the basic ingredients, right? So it's amazing how little we know about sannyas sometimes. But Lord Chaitanya made it very, very clear. And then, on the other hand, we see how Lord Nityananda acts on the transcendental platform. So on the one hand, Lord Chaitanya is upholding the principles of Dharma, and on the other hand, Lord Nityananda is acting on the transcendental platform, and because the devotees of Navadvipa have this attachment for the Supreme Lord, that is higher than anything else, and therefore Lord Nityananda arranges that these devotees come together again, except for Vishnupriya. Right? She is the only one. It's said that everyone from Navadvipa, this is again Chaitanya Mangal, everyone from Navadvipa, including the men, the women, the young girls, the old ladies, the blind, the dumb, the lame, not a single resident of Navadvipa stayed back. Right? Here in the Chaitanya Chandradari Natak, Lord Nityananda arranges it that there are guards on the door of Advaitacharya's house because he says soon the masses will come, the crowds will come, and we have to make sure that not everyone just comes into the house. And at one point, so only the intimate devotees are allowed in the house and others have to wait outside, and Lord Chaitanya then goes outside to meet them. At that point, so in this way the two lords are working contradictorily but actually are fulfilling various purposes all at once. It is a very interesting way because Lord Chaitanya is not compromising his sannyas dharma. It's not his fault, right, what happened here. So he all along upholds sannyas dharma very strict, but yet then Lord Nityananda has brought him there. All right, he is reciprocating for a few days and then he leaves again. It is like that. Let me see. Where is that? Yeah, like in the beginning of the next act, there is a verse which is said that looking at Lord Chaitanya, it speaks about the bitterness of renunciation. And it is Gopinath Acharya who is speaking. He said, "Formerly there was only this sweet taste of pure love for Krishna, but now that sweetness is mixed with the bitterness of renunciation. Although my eyes taste only the sweetness, my heart tastes both bitter and sweet." Right. So this is indeed what's going on. The devotees, they see Lord Chaitanya, and it's wonderful. It's totally inspiring. But in their heart, there is this sense like he took sannyas now, and that means that he will leave again. There's no doubt about it, right? He will not stay in one place. He will leave. So therefore, now there is this element of the bitterness of renunciation added on. This bitterness of renunciation is indeed a very important part in taking sannyas. And Prabhupada therefore said that he didn't want to take sannyas. Prabhupada said that his spiritual master appeared before him in a dream and told him to take sannyas, and he ignored it. Right? He said, "I was horrified." He used the word horrified. Right? Which is very nice, actually. I mean, we are sometimes so eager, you know, to take sannyas, but actually, it's materially speaking, it's a very narrow vow. Right? The vow is very narrow, leaves no room at all for anything, right? For any normal social interaction. And once taken the vow, that's it. Right? You can never be a normal person again, because most of the time you are the only one with that vow. So you're in the middle of all these people who don't have such a vow, and you have a vow, and that's it. Right? You You can act as if you're with, like, you know, you can socialize with devotees, etc. But you know, actually, am I really now 100% dedicating my time to Krishna consciousness, right? Am I really, like, absorbing myself now in remembering Krishna and serving Krishna with full energy? Am I? And if not, actually one is not living up to the vow. And then, if one is not living up to the meaning of this vow, to be 100% absorbed in remembrance of the Lord or service of the Lord, then one feels the pinch of the vow. Right? Then it becomes narrow. Of course, this is not only with the sannyas vow, it's intensified with the sannyas vow. The same exists in initiation of vows, but to a lesser extent, because there is more social sharing in that we do together. And within that there is some room still for material expression, but not in the sannyas vow, right? Nothing. Because actually, when one is not 100% dedicated, then one falls short. And it's not just then one falls short by the judgment of someone else, but one falls short in actually becoming absorbed to the point as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, in total ecstasy. And the result is sannyas will be heavy. It will become a struggle at times. Right? And so on and so on. And look in the history books and go on and on. So, therefore, the bitterness is there. It is not. So this element of bitterness, as soon as one tastes, as soon as the sannyasi himself tastes the bitterness of the renunciation, he'd better get serious about rededicating himself to the service of the Supreme Lord, meditation on the Supreme Lord, and so on. Lord Chaitanya immediately did that when he took sannyas, just completely, right? And just never came down from that platform of being totally 100% dedicated. And it doesn't really matter how much what one expresses when one preaches, right? One can preach great and afterwards again come down from that platform. So it's a constant endeavor, and only by that constant endeavor can one actually taste the sweetness of renunciation, which is very nice. And then it's wonderful. Then it's really an incredible impetus. And therefore, it does make quite a big difference. It's not that the sannyas ashram is the same as the brahmachari ashram, or that it's close. It's very different in one sense, because the vow is much heavier, so much heavier. But therefore also can be so much more intense in one's meditation on Krishna, and in this way so much more blissful, so much more wonderful, such a more wonderful impetus. So in this way, I'll read these few excerpts again. Well, I read already. The ecstasy made him like an old man. Now the Lord's madness of bliss makes him like an old man. He opens his eyes but cannot see what is before him. Half deaf, he can hear a little but cannot understand the meaning of the words. So yes, as one becomes more and more absorbed in Krishna, one loses his interest for the material world and gradually has no more interest in material affairs, and at one point it goes even to the point one cannot perceive the material energy anymore. So a devotee basically should not have much interest in the material energy other than what he can use for devotional service. And for the rest, forget it. Right? Not so many dreams, not so many hopes, not so many desires. This world is quite insignificant in that sense. So that message is coming through. I want to read quickly through a few acts because otherwise I will never make it to the end of the play. So we'll keep on following the paper, then later I'll go back to the book. So the next act is interesting. The situation is that Ganga, she comes on stage, and the Ganga personified, the river, has appeared on stage, and she's totally in an agitated state of mind, very disturbed, and her husband, the ocean, is also there. So there's an exchange between them, and basically he's asking, what's wrong? What's the cause of all this agitation? And she is expressing that she's very disturbed, very disturbed. So he's trying to peacefully say, well, you know, let's talk about it. Let's see what's happening, and trying to pacify her a little, and asking for the cause. And she's explaining she's disturbed because now Lord Gauranga's lotus feet are no longer touching her waters. This is a major problem, right? What to do? Anyway, the ocean, as a husband, has thought of a solution. He says, yes, well, but you are all getting upset for no reason, because actually he left, but then he came back. He came back. He's in the house of Advaitacharya. So calm down. Everything is all right. No need to worry. You see, you're all getting upset. It's all in your head. Just calm down. A typical homely scenario. Yeah? And so he's trying to calm her down. And she's saying, no, you are not informed. He has already left the house of Advaitacharya. Now the ocean is a little shocked. Really? Did he leave? When? How did it happen? Why? So in these questions of the ocean, then it is revealed what happened in the house of Advaita, and how finally Lord Chaitanya bowed down to his mother, and how he said, well, I was mad when I took sannyas, but what to do now? Now I'll be criticized, and now I cannot stay here. Please tell me where I should go. And then she sends him to Jagannath Puri, because two rooms in one house, the residents of Puri are going to Navadvip, the residents of Navadvip are going to Puri, and all this. Right? So this is happening in the exchange between the ocean and Ganga. Right? Then the ocean said, now I understand. He said, in Jagannath Puri, the Lord will be bathing every day in my waters. So still you have no reason at all to be agitated, because the wife is sharing in all the benefits of the husband. Right? So you are getting all the benefits, so there is no reason for you to be depressed at all. And well, you know, I mean, it's her noble husband who said it, so she takes it, you know, and walks away, kind of emotionally not really there yet, you know, still feeling the separation, but kind of feeling bamboozled at all these arguments and not having a solution. So this is what's happening. And it's a brilliant way, because in this way, the writer has taken us from Navadvip to Puri, instead of the boring way, and then Lord Chaitanya went from Navadvip to Jagannath Puri. As I would have written it, I could have never thought of anything else. But here, by this meeting of Ganga and the ocean, we have come to Jagannath Puri. And in Jagannath Puri, in Jagannath Puri, we're meeting with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Meeting with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, of course, we find that the first person who is there is Gopinathacharya. He is a great devotee. Gopinathacharya is entering into a discussion with the students of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, how Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the students, who are all students of logic, are asking for the proof. And then Gopinath Acharya gives some proof. Yes, we can look at that because I can't remember that exactly verbatim. What is the proof? Well, Gopinath Acharya made a point to these disciples. What evidence makes you think he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Gopinath, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be understood only by his mercy. Because the Lord is perfectly spiritual in nature, he cannot be understood by material logic and argument. The disciples, that's not the philosophy of the Vedas. Why can the Supreme Personality of Godhead not be understood by logic? Gopinath, by logic, one may be able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead exists, but one cannot understand what he is like. Only by his mercy one can understand him. So that's a very interesting point, something to remember. It's very simple and to the point. By logic, one can maybe understand that the Supreme Lord exists, but one cannot understand what he's like. And it's a very good argument, right, which we can use in our preaching. We can actually explain this point. Yes, logic is nice, but it falls short. It can take you only to that point, maybe, that you can figure out, yes, he exists. But then, if you don't know what he's like, you still don't know nothing. So that depends on the mercy of the Lord. He asks, the disciples ask, where's the proof of that in scripture? Gopinath, there is proof in the words of the Puranas. The disciples quote, Gopinath, my Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate in order to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Veda for many years. And this is a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14:29. So here we're actually getting a little bit of proof here, some Siddhanta that we can use, and it's nice, good point. Well, then the discussion continues, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya comes in at the end after all these disciples have been arguing with Gopinath Acharya, and finally Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is pointing out that yes, we know you are a Vaishnava, it's all right. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wants to offer sannyas again to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he's from the inferior sampradaya. So Gopinath Acharya is quite upset about this and basically is hoping that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya will become a devotee. In the play, there's not much energy put in the actual conversion of Bhattacharya. That is very shortly and quickly dealt with and just brushed over. But there's quite some energy put in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then, speaking after he has become a devotee. After Lord Chaitanya has come, early in the morning after Mangalarti, Lord Chaitanya went to the temple for Mangalarti, and there the pujari gave him something. The devotees could see that, but they couldn't see exactly what it was. They saw a flower garland, this, that, and then suddenly Lord Chaitanya ran out of the temple. So the devotees followed him as good as they could, came to the house of Bhattacharya just in time to see him jumping around the room like a madman, and they were wondering what happened. And he And the servant told him, this sannyasi just came in, gave him a garland, gave him prasadam. He didn't even wash his mouth. He took it, and now he became mad. We don't know what happened. He's just been like this, jumping around the room like that. We've never seen him like this. I mean, what happened? Gopinath Acharya is in ecstasy, right, to watch all this happening. And he says, it's the mercy of the Lord. Afterwards, a little later in the act, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya begins to explain some philosophy. And there are lengthy explanations given on defeating Mayavad. And I won't touch upon them all, although I've given many in the paper here. But I will just touch some of the most fundamental ones. So it states that in the case of the word Brahman, that the root of that word is, I wouldn't, however you pronounce it, how you pronounce this, Rembrandt? Brahma? Well, he's the Sanskrit scholar here. That's what he does. So, in front of Sanskrit scholars, I'm always a little intimidated, you know. So, Brahma? Brim. Okay, Brim. It's Brim. Grim with Brim. So, it is translated, it says this root is translated as either the greatest, or he who protects all living entities. So it says, considering these two meanings of the very root, it said, therefore, it is clear that Brahman has qualities. So this is like, it's very good proof, really like very basic, very fundamental explanation, which I find very useful. Right? It's not difficult to remember also, simply because in the word Brim, there is already the greatest, or he who protects all living entities, the qualities of the personality are present within Brahman. That is the first thing. And then there are some very famous statements, such as Sa Aik Saka, and there's another one, Sa Gam Yata. So it said that when the Lord cast his glance, everything comes into being, and he impregnates the universe with his glance. So he glances, right? And Sakamita, he desires. It says, obviously, when there's glancing and desiring, again, there is qualities and personalities. Now, these are like very fundamental elements of that one finds in the Upanishads. So, we're going here to like basic explanations, not into finer technicalities or something. Therefore, they are very useful. If one goes further into many of these explanations, some are very, very detailed. And I put him in the paper because I thought, it's nice. You take something home after such a seminar, and you know, you have a paper lying around, and maybe later on You want to use it for something, then it's all there. But I'm not going to get into all the nitty gritty of all the other points right now. I just leave it like that. I'm going to sit back down. So I'll go on reading a little bit. Anytime anybody wants to interrupt with any question or comment, go for it. Yeah, Henry. But you have to speak loud. I'm a little deaf today. Yeah. Lord Nityananda is also. Yes. So in the Panchatattva, the five members of the Panchatattva, there are three who are actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya. Then Gadadhar, he is the energy of the Lord. And then Srivas Pandit is the devotee of the Lord. He is the living entity, like we are, representing us, living entities. So these three, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya, are all different aspects of the Supreme Lord. As it said in the Brahma Samhita, Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam, there is one Supreme Lord, but he is Anantarupam, he has many forms. So here we're seeing that, how Lord Chaitanya is the original form of the Lord. Lord Nityananda is also the original form of the Lord, but in a different mood, in the mood of serving him. And Advaita Acharya is the expansion of the Lord. Like that. There are a few other quotes here. There was a little quote about the Puranas. I would like to know where it's from, but it's a verse that is quoted here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Nataka, but there was no reference given, unfortunately. But it says that the spiritual message propounded in the thousand limbs of the tree of the Vedas is not always perfectly clear to see. In order to clarify the meaning of the Vedas, the branches known as the Puranas have sprouted from the tree of the Vedas. Well, that's also a nice statement about the position of the Puranas, how they're meant to clarify the Vedas, actually. And of course, especially, we know that amongst the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost, 18 Puranas, 6 for those in the mode of ignorance, 6 for those in the mode of passion, 5 for those in the mode of goodness, and 1 transcendental Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So then we're going to act number 7. So we're continuing in Jagannath Puri, and now the act begins where the king, Maharaj Prataparuda, has summoned the Bhattacharya because he's eager to hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. At this point, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has been so much transformed from an impersonalist to a devotee that he's become one of the most intimate devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one of the topmost devotees. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya describes how Lord Chaitanya left for the south and then met with Ramananda Roy. Next, a Brahmana who followed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to South India enters and describes how the Lord met with Kurma the Brahmana, and how he cured Vasudev the leper, and next, how he went to Nrisinga, etc., and then follow the details of the Lord's discussion with Ramananda Roy. So we can read a little bit from that, from this discussion with Ramananda Roy. Just a moment, please. This is 8. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the famous Ramananda Samvat, where each time Lord Chaitanya is asking what is the goal of life, and each time when Ramananda Roy gives an answer, then Lord Chaitanya says that's very nice, but it's external. Is there more? And then each time it goes to a deeper level of Krishna consciousness, to the point where it begins to describe the five rasas and finally comes to the topmost rasa. So, and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita after that, there is a list of many questions which Lord Chaitanya is asking and Ramananda Roy is replying, like what is real education? Questions like that are being asked. So these are the questions which are also being addressed by Kavi Karnapur. He doesn't enter into the Ramananda Samvad at all. He leaves that for whatever it is. But he goes into this part. And so he says, Lord Chaitanya says, what is real knowledge, Ramananda? Devotion to Lord Hari, Krishna, is real knowledge. Knowledge of the material portion of the Vedas and other scriptures is not real knowledge. What is real fame? Real fame is to be famous as a great devotee of the Lord. To be famous as a great philanthropist who gives money and charity is not real fame. Bhagavan, what is real wealth? Real wealth is love for Krishna. To possess money, followers, and villages is not real wealth. What is suffering? Real suffering is not to have the association of a dear devotee of Krishna. A wound at the heart or some other kind of material suffering of the body is not real suffering. Oh. Good. What are the liberated souls? They who love Krishna's lotus feet and do not love anything else, who delight in bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotional service, and are not attached to Astanga yoga or any other kind of yoga, who place their love in the transcendental form of the Lord and not in their own external material body, is actually liberated and free from the material world. Non-devotees who claim to be liberated are not so. Bhagavan, it is so. What should be glorified in song? Krishna's pastimes in Vraja. What is the best thing in the world? The association of saintly devotees. What should be remembered? Krishna's name. On what should one meditate? Krishna's feet. Where should one reside? In Vraja. What should make the ear happy? Only Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Talking about where should one reside in Vraja, at one point there is a statement how Advaitacharya, although he lives in Shantipur, he actually resides in Navadvip. Right? He may live in Shantipur, but he resides in Navadvip because all the pastimes are in Navadvip. Lord Chaitanya is in Navadvip, so that's where he resides. His house may be in Shantipur, but he resides in Navadvip. And in the same way, we can also think, we may be here, but we don't reside here. So wherever one physically is has nothing to do with one's residence. Now we are just traveling away from home. That's all. We're far away from home. What can be done? Traveling. But home is obviously, as it says here, in Vraja or in Navadvip. There's no difference. Right? That's where we reside. No doubt. What should make the ear happy? Only Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Who should be worshipped there? Sisi Radha Krishna are the supreme object of worship. So like that, he's gone through a list establishing clearly that pure devotional service is all that matters. And with that, he has touched upon some essentials. Not interested in money, followers, or anything. Not considering the suffering of the material world, real suffering. Real suffering means to not have the association of the devotees. The best thing in the world, the association of saintly devotees. So much emphasis on the association of the devotees. And that's it then. And for us that means ISKCON. That's what we have. And sometimes you think, well, is this it, you know? Huh? Sometimes we think, I wish that there would be some devotees like are described in these literatures, you know, that a few of them would walk in and then he would say, yeah, I want to associate with them. But other times you think, do I really belong with these people? Right? I don't know if everybody has those thoughts. I confess that sometimes I do, right? That it has happened to me. I think, God, you know, is this the place where I belong? Right? I finally found it after my long, long search for so many years. Here I am in this temple, and I belong with these people. Right? And I look around, and I wonder. Right? But still, I know that's only the mind. We have to stick it out with these devotees and make it with these devotees. And when we feel that things are not exactly the way we would want them to be, that may be so because there may be many devotees under the influence of the modes of material nature. As we yesterday went over the chart, which I drew up a chart, but it was, I'm such a crummy artist that it was such a crooked drawing, and I had no time to have it printed out, so I just was too ashamed to leave it on the wall so for everyone to look at my work of art. So I took it down again. So you just have to look at the picture in your mind. But in that chart, basically, there was a description of devotional service with nectar and without nectar. Right. So if one is in a group of devotees who are all engaged in devotional service without nectar, yeah, then sometimes it can be a little bit stressful. You know, sometimes that level of devotional service without nectar, it says it is under the three modes, and sometimes it even goes into the lower modes where one strangles another and all kinds of things. You know, we are encountering then big discussions about these things, etc. It's not uncommon at all. You'd be surprised how many devotees get down to that level of like physical, right? I mean, you hear stories, everyone, you see it happening so many times. As a temple president, boy, how many times I had to put people in their corners, back in your corners. It's a very dangerous job to be the referee in a boxing match, as I have experienced, right? What to do? One must be... sometimes we wonder. But there's no alternative. These are the devotees that are there, and this is where we do belong, right? Sometimes you hear statements that my friends from before were much nicer people, and maybe they were, but unfortunately they weren't doing nicer things, right? They may have been nice, but what they did obviously was not so nice. So whereas the devotees may not always be the nicest people, but they're doing the only thing that is nice in this world, and they're dedicated to that, and even if they lack qualities anyway, one tolerates, because we're all together in the process of devotional service going forward. And this is important because we have to stick it out. There are so many people that take a distance from the devotees, from ISKCON, more and more for different reasons, because they don't like certain interactions, certain qualities of certain people, etc. But better just to continue and to tolerate and to stay in that association, because that's where the essence is in life, right? Hearing and chanting about Krishna. And wherever that's going on, everything else doesn't really matter. It's all about being in the association of those who are involved in hearing and chanting. So the seventh act is taking us to the point where Lord Chaitanya's activities in the south are described, how he met the illiterate Brahmana who studied the Gita and who was recognized by Lord Chaitanya as the greatest devotee because he had true appreciation for how Krishna became the servant of his devotee. So Lord Chaitanya appreciated him the most. And then we continue with the description of the mercy to Maharaj Prataparuda. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is trying to convince Lord Chaitanya to meet with Maharaj Prataparuda. The Lord is not agreeable. There's no way that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to meet a sinful king. It's also described how Maharaj Prataparuda had many wives. Right? Later on in the act, it is described how during Snan Yatra, there were usually special seating arrangements for the queens, and the many queens of the king would sit there. So was not just without any reason. Externally, Maharaj Prataparuda had all the appearances of a visayi, of a sense enjoyer. He had so many wives, he had all that opulence, etc. So it's not so strange that Lord Chaitanya acted like that. Sometimes one may think, well, why didn't he want to meet the head of state? You know, we are also so many times meeting a president. But here, really, these kings were also living in that way. Of course, a modern head of state is worse than these kings, because a modern head of state he may have officially one wife, but so many others, obviously. Plus, these are very sinful personalities, whereas Maharaj Prataparuda was a saintly king, and kings at that time, in that culture, were saintly personalities. But Lord Chaitanya would not meet him. Cannot meet with such a sense gratifier. So, Gopinath Acharya appears and inquires about the residence of the Lord, and it's in Kasi Mishra's house, very close to the Simhadwara gate. So, Kasi Mishra is also a very fortunate devotee, because somehow or other the Lord stays in his house for all these years in Jagannath Puri. So although Kasi Mishra in itself, you don't see so many amazing pastimes with Kasi Mishra, but Kasi Mishra is someone who had Lord Chaitanya for 18 years practically in his house. Of course, we deduct the years that he traveled in South India, but then it's still 12 years. Right? So he stayed 18 years. He stayed in the house. It was 18 years in the house of Kasi Mishra. So Kasi Mishra gets special mercy, very special mercy. He was every once in a while, but not so much. If you at least it seems here. Yeah, he came back a few times in those 6 years. Yes, and he was there every once in a while. Sure, that is true. His base was Puri, but it was a long journey through South India, and then he came, and then of course. Actually, in those 6 years, he was kept for 2 years by Ramananda Rai, right, who managed to keep him from going to Vrindavan, and he kept him there for 2 years because he was each time delaying his departure for Vrindavan. So it was also mentioned that it took actually only after 2 years then he went. Yeah, so those 2 years out of the six he actually stayed. And so it was not fully six. Still, he was gone also for years, which seemed like a moment, like 12 years or more. So you can imagine how long it was. So there was great distress in Jagannath Puri for Lord Chaitanya not being there. So Kasi Mishra's house is very close to the Simhadwara gate. So in that way, they thought it was very nice. The Lord could easily go to the temple for darshan and so on. Then in the play, just one great personality after another comes on stage. Here it's no longer chronological, but here it's just introducing some of the main personalities that have principal relationships with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, such as Paramananda Puri. It is said that the transcendental power of my elder brother Vishwarup has entered the body of Paramananda Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. Then Sarup Damodar Goswami comes, and the main thing about Sarup Damodar Goswami that is mentioned is that he is a very dedicated devotee, and that he is so dedicated to devotional service that although he took sannyas from a Mayavadi guru, he always refused to discuss the Vedanta Sutra. He didn't study it, didn't want to discuss it, simply discussed devotional service, which is like in that atmosphere, all by himself, just stood up for devotional service, therefore very serious about his devotional service. And he never formally took the robes of the sannyasi, although he took sannyas, and he just he stayed very renounced, but became a great devotee. Then Govinda, who is the godbrother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is sent, and here we're following the same as the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the point is made that Govinda is the disciple of Isvara Puri. And how is it that he can become the servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that one cannot use the servant of the spiritual master. One cannot take service of the service of the servant of the spiritual master. That's not possible. So how could he do so? How could he accept Govinda? The only reason why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Govinda was because it was the order of Isvara Puri. And it said that although the etiquette is one thing, the etiquette was Govinda could not really be accepted as the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But the order of the spiritual master is more important than the etiquette. So again, this is an important point in also in our movement. And I guess I myself am on the strength of such an order doing devotional service, because it is stated that when one's spiritual master is present, one should not accept disciples. But in my case, he ordered me to accept disciples. Although my spiritual master is present, he ordered me. And finally, with the GBC rubber stamp, here I'm doing this service, which is, again, the order of the spiritual master is more important than the etiquette. But the etiquette stands. So that point is made here. It is made in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and is an important point for Vaishnava interaction. Brahmananda Bharati, wearing a deer skin and being somewhat, he was the godbrother of Isvara Puri, but somewhat inclined towards impersonalism. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw him in a deer skin, just ignored him, which shocked him. And then he came to his senses, changed to sannyas dress, and also recognized the glory of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Lord, and became a real staunch Vaishnava. Next, Ratha Yatra time has come. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is trying to arrange a meeting between the king and the Lord. Sarvabhauma. Although the messenger... First, we should say that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had seen that the king had real love for the Supreme Lord, and therefore he felt he should ask. But when he asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on one occasion, then he was very strong. And he said, if you will speak of this again, I will leave. Then what could he do? So now the king... Then finally, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is asked by the king, and he's saying, like, well, he's trying to avoid answering the question. And then he says, although the messenger, that is your love for him, will make the actual arrangements for your meeting with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still my advice can give some help. Dress like a common man and meet the Lord, after the Ratha Yatra in the Kundicha Gardens. So this is again a good point. One cannot get Krishna by any material arrangements. The material arrangements can only be of the nature of support. So we can make so many circumstances, but ultimately only our devotional service can attract Krishna. And not putting ourselves, therefore, in a condition of ashram, putting ourselves in a condition of austerity, putting ourselves in any material position, it will not help. Right? Only our devotional service will bring us to Krishna. Mm. And the devotees from Bengal begin to arrive for the festival. Gopinath Acharya describes their name and qualities to the king who watches from the roof. The Lord meets all his beloved associates and afterwards exclaims, "Today has been a great festival for me, and tomorrow will be the great Kundicha festival." So the Kundicha festival refers to Ratha Yatra, because in Puri they refer to it as Kundicha festival because the chariot goes to the Kundicha temple. And there the deity stays for 1 week and then goes back from the Kundicha temple to the main temple. So therefore Ratha Yatra is referred to as the Kundicha festival. Then Ratha Yatra begins, the parade, with the moving and stopping of the cart, tumultuous sankirtan, and Lord Chaitanya's dancing. Afterwards, the Lord enters a garden to rest. The king appears dressed as a common man and grabs hold of the Lord's lotus feet. Due to transcendental ecstasy, the Lord does not recognize the king. So I just today have been kind of in the middle of this play, just brushing over the acts and just taking a few little points. We cannot do much more because of time constraint. And then tomorrow this Ratha Yatra pastime is happening, and then we can go more in depth on that particular, on the final acts. And that's what I decided to do. So with this quick way of reading through, I've left out many interesting statements, many interesting points, but what can be done? I guess there is more in the paper than what I've said, and there's still more in the book. Let me see if I can. Which act are we now? 8. Sorry, just a second. The 7. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't have any questions, any comments. No. Yeah. But just speak a little loud because my ear is blocked. Five rasas. Yes. Well, there are five principal rasas, right? And then there are also secondary rasas, which include, they are 7 actually. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are learning 5 principal rasas, which describe from Dasya up to Madhurya. And then the secondary rasas, which are 7, and they include wonder, chivalry, anger is one of them, ghastliness is one of them, and my memory cannot remember so many numbers as 7 in one go without rehearsal. So that's about it. But that's the principle. So the 5 primaries, the secondary. The primary rasas are there, and then the secondary rasas, also hasya, laughter is one, they are present within the other 5. Right? So within the other 5, like one they can be in parental, and then sometimes one is going through a mood of laughter. Other times one is going through a mood of wonder, being amazed, other times in a mood of anger, other times here in this whole sannyas pastime where Lord Chaitanya is gone, right, for 3 days, that was more ghastliness, right? The ras was ghastliness. They were dying, and they were just suffering. It was just intense horror that he was gone. So like that, within the five principal rasas, the seven secondary are present. So here in that chart, there was a number a little less here and there. A few were left out. But what can I say? I just followed the play. Yeah. Okay, I'm not expert at Sanskrit drama at all, right? But I have been reading a little bit about it now, just brushing over, that's all. So I can only give some quick impressions, right, from what I read. And basically, it is the most elaborate form of drama. It is the natak. It's very long, for one thing. It's like really an all-day performance. So that's one reason. It's the biggest form of drama. And then each particular emotion that is expressed, right, there are many conditions how it is expressed. You cannot just, if there's anger expressed, yes, in the play, then that anger must be introduced in a certain way, it must be manifest, and then it must be afterwards, it must be digested, there must be some discussion about it, and in this way, that's all prescribed. Yeah? And one can, within that, make his own variations and solutions. But so for each emotion, there is a whole sequence described of how one has to present that. So in that way, it's quite complex Sanskrit drama. So it's quite bound by many rules, and one can make choices between different solutions, etc. And there's a lot of creativity within it. But once you address a topic, you have to present it from beginning to end, fully. So there's a structure which helps the writer to fully put his theme, to fully present his theme, which is very nice actually, because it's difficult if you're writing to really completely put your topic down. Usually, you know, you touch upon something, but then you go into another aspect and you leave this topic, you leave it with a somewhat one-sided presentation. So the strict rules of Sanskrit drama are helping to make a complete presentation on the topic. And that way it's complex, quite complex. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the first thing. The rasa is the essence. And that's why sometimes he does that. Like I was saying in Puri, when all these personalities come, one after another comes on stage. It's like, you know, it's almost primitive, right? It's like, here comes one, introduces himself, Paramananda Puri. Oh, Swarup Damodar has, oh, Govinda. It's like, I think, God, that looks really clumsy, right? But here he's simply going for the rasa and forgetting chronology or even trying to fit it into a story. He's just quickly introducing these personalities and gives each of their mood. So the rasa is the essence of everything. The whole thing is rasa. Very true. I don't know if there's some... Do you know something more? Want to add something? You need a mic? Because I can... No? Then you have to say it more loud. So he says a Nataka is generally based on historical facts which are taken from such as Mahabharata or Ramayana, like that. Okay, well, for the rest, there are books available. He gave me a few to study, but I had no time to study them. I got them too late, you know, like I got them the day before the course, and then it was too late to study up. So I looked at them, but that's about it. Can you speak more loud? Vishaka can help you there. Okay, if there's no other questions, then we'll stop. Thank you very much. Court arrangements by adjusting the material happened. We don't know. All the devotees.